Shit, Daryl and I say at the same time. That wasn't who we were expecting. Ixion appears at my door, doesn't bother to knock, and walks right in like he owns the place. We've been friends. Well, we haven't exactly been friends for a very long time, but we've known each other since we were little boys. And back in our college days, we might have thought about being more than friends. He's still kind of pissed about that game I played with him and his new girlfriend last month. So while I shouldn't be surprised he's here, I am. He should be thanking me for that shit. No one ever thanks me. I mean, he got a new lease on life. He's not living out in that shack up in 10 miles from nowhere, Wyoming, and he's back in Denver, where he belongs, I might add, with a pretty hot chick I introduced him to. You'd think a guy would get a thank you for that, right? I laugh. Well, this is a surprise. Come on in, Ix. Oh, you already have. In that case, have a seat. Can I get you a drink? Daryl, get the man a drink. He doesn't sit, and one look over at Daryl says he's not here for the drink. He just lifts up his sunglasses so they're resting on his forehead, places both hands flat on the top of my desk, glares down at me, and says, "What the fuck are you doing?" I exhale. That exhale says, "I'm annoyed, I'm busy, and you don't have an appointment." But I pride myself on being professional, so I say, "What the ever-loving fuck are you talking about now? I mean, Jesus Christ, Ixion, I get it. You don't like me. You think I'm a bad guy. You think I fuck with people's lives. So why do you insist on," I make air quotes with my fingers, "bumping into me every chance you get?" I see this fucker everywhere. The goddamn symphony, though that was partly my fault, at Chella's little tea room, which I love and frequent often since she makes the most delicious pastries in town. He's even working out at my fucking gym now. And it's like he just inserted himself into my world or something. And believe me, if I had known getting him down here for that last job I hired him to do was gonna subject me to his unending angst and anger, I'd have left his ass in jail. "I heard you have a game going." "Daryl," I say, not taking my eyes off Ix. "Do we have a game going?" "We've got 16 games going," Daryl replies. 16 games, I say, still looking at Ixion. "So, which one are you interested in?" "You know what game," he says. "No, Ixion, I really don't. So either get real specific or just get the fuck out." He points his finger at me, glares at me, leans forward a little, letting me know just who I'm talking to, and says, "Could he kick my ass? I'm not sure. He's big, but I'm smart. I think smart beats big every day of the week." "I'm not gonna play with you." Eyes narrowed, jaw clenching, teeth bared, and not in a smiling way either. He's always been dramatic like that. I open my mouth to say something witty and childish and mean, but I can hear Eileen outside in the hallway talking loudly. "What the fuck?" I say, looking at Daryl. He shrugs, and then a man appears in my door, flanked by, "Oh, this is fucking great," I say. "Who the fuck are you?" Ixion asks, as if he's got any right to know anything. But the guy pulls out one of those flip-open badge holder wallet things and flashes it at me. "FBI, motherfucker, that's who I am." I look at Ix. He looks at Daryl. Daryl looks at me. I look back at Ix. Ixion says, "I'll be back." Then flips his sunglasses down on his face like he's the goddamn Terminator and walks out. Okay. Annoying ex-friend, lover, not quite, taken care of. Now, back to angry guy number 2. "How can I help you, agent?" I read his badge because he's still flashing it at me. "Murphy?" I squint to see it because it's still kind of far away. "Do you know who this is?" He jacks his thumb at Izzy Gray. "Nice to see you again, Izzy. No hard feelings about last night, right?"
"I knew it," she yells, jumping and kind of spinning in place like an overexcited puppy. "You did this, I knew it!"
"I'm gonna need to ask you some questions, Mr. Wells," Agent Murphy says.
"I'm out of here," Daryl says, getting up from his chair. "I'll catch up with you later."
He walks toward the door without a second glance back at me. "Thanks, Daryl. Remind me not to make you a real partner in crime, because you'd probably bail on me the first time things got heavy." He waves a hand over his shoulder as he turns the corner and disappears, ignoring my deteriorating mood. Which is why I keep him around. He kind of gets me.
Okay, I say, clapping my hands and rubbing them together. Izzy, do you mind closing the door? Whatever this is, Wells Sr. doesn't need to hear about it. He's got a bad heart. Agent Murphy kicks out and the door slams shut with a bang. I smile. I'm not gonna let this day go to shit. I've got too many things in play to let one ex-lover, friend, whatever Ixion is, a jilted game player, and an FBI agent take away my zen. I think you two had better sit down and take a deep breath. Izzy Gray opens her mouth to snarl at me, but I hold up a finger and say, more forcefully this time, sit the fuck down. She sits. He doesn't. But that's typical, right? Men. Did you approach? Murphy says. Miss Gray, last night about a sexual fantasy fulfillment game? Nope. Liar, Izzy says, kinda yelling, which makes her boyfriend here shoot her a look, which I think says, let me handle this. I look at Izzy Gray because I have a file on her, and I know she doesn't let anyone handle something she can handle herself, so I expect her to put up a fight. But she doesn't, which piques my curiosity.
Chapter 20. Finn. Okay, I say. Let's just all calm down. I'm calm, Jordan Wells says. It's you two who might need a Xanax. You have some nerve, you know that? Izzy is sitting in one of the chairs in front of Jordan's desk. Her legs don't even reach the ground. I mean, her toes do, but she's kind of swinging her feet because she's nervous, which is adorable, and kind of makes me happy. Jesus, what's wrong with me? Did you, or did you not, have a conversation with Miss Gray last night about playing a sexual fantasy game? No comment, Wells says. I just look at him, then remember he's some kind of high-powered lawyer here in Denver and adjust. Okay. But I'm going to take you down to headquarters for questioning if you don't cooperate. Jordan shakes his head. No, you're not. Unless I'm under arrest and you're prepared to handcuff me, I'm not going anywhere, and you're not doing anything. Izzy sighs. Just make this easy, Wells. Just cooperate. Her fucking house was ransacked last night, okay? Someone broke in and went through her shit, broke her things, personal things, things that meant something to her. And we think it's got something to do with your game. Number one, Wells says, holding up a finger. I don't have to answer your questions. It's called the right to remain silent. Number two, I have no business dealings with Miss Gray whatsoever. Isn't that right, Izzy? We both look at her. She shrugs. I think you do, and you're just not telling me. Number three, he continues. The very short conversation we had last night at dinner. He looks at Izzy again. It wasn't dinner. What would you call it? Drinks? He shrugs. Izzy looks like she might stand up and throat chop him, and right about now I'm silently rooting for her to do that. Regardless, that conversation happened after we signed an ironclad non-disclosure agreement. I force myself not to look at Izzy. So you're hiding behind that, piece of shit. Look, he says, I'm not obligated to say anything to you, Murphy, but in the interest of making you get the fuck out of my office without causing a scene, I'll tell you something useful. I wait for it, but he does one of those dramatic pauses. So I say, well, what is it? I turned her down, he whispers, then looks over at Izzy. You told him that, right? She sighs, looks kind of scared and small, and I suddenly have a lot of hate for this lawyer. She told me that, I say, which makes Jordan raise his eyebrows and look over at Izzy again. You better be careful. That NDA is no joke. You and I both know that NDA means nothing if a crime has been committed. What crime? Jordan practically snorts. If there'd been a crime, you really would be arresting me. But instead, you're here making idle threats trying to scare me into falling for your stupid federal interrogation techniques. I'm the most powerful defense lawyer in the Rocky Mountain region, Agent Murphy. And while that might not mean much to a guy who comes from D.C., it's my turn to raise my eyebrows, because this means he's been digging up dirt on me. It means a lot here, because I know every judge, every state congressperson, every local police chief, and even the fucking governor. So you'd better get your shit straight if you want to play bad cop with me. Got it? If you're not playing a game with me, Izzy says, then why did you lie last night? What did I lie about? Wells actually has the gall to look confused. We called your office last night, I say, and we were told your entire office was shut down for a midwinter holiday. So why lie? Why not just take the call?
Chapter 21. Jordan. Who called? I ask.
The fucking FBI called, that's who, Murphy says.
No, who specifically? I ask again. People, man, you gotta lead them down a path by the goddamn hand or they just don't get it. Luckily, that's my specialty. I'm the best at swaying a jury. It's like my God-given gift.
I don't know who. Someone from the fucking office.
Don't you think you should find that out? He just stares at me. So I scratch my neck, wait him out a few seconds, but he's either unable to find the right connection or refusing to do so. I whisper, Agent Murphy, if someone from your office said they called me last night and they told you I was unavailable, well, you might have a problem in your organization. Which makes him blink. I look over at Izzy. Whatever it is you think I'm doing to your life right now, I shake my head. That's not me, Izzy, I swear. Not me.
Then who?
She asks. Well, I say, tapping some keys on my keyboard and pulling up her file. I point to the screen, which she can't see since she's facing the back of the monitor, and say, probably one of the very questionable people from your past, eh? Maybe? Possibly? Could be? Stop it, Murphy says. You don't have to be a dick. No, I don't, and I'm not, believe me. If I were being a dick, you'd know it. I'm being immature and smug at the moment, but not a dick.
That right there, Murphy says, pointing, is dickish.
Whatever you say. My point is, Izzy Gray has quite the checkered past. She looks at me wide-eyed. I'm the best. I think I just made that clear a few seconds ago, and if you were going to be one of my players, it was my job to make sure I knew the risks. And even though you're pretty high up there in the risk department, Ms. Gray, I sat down with you as a favor to our mutual friend, and once I heard the specifics of your needs, I decided to walk away, and that's exactly what I did.
So you're blaming her?
That's Murphy. But I can see in his eyes that he already knows everything I just told him. Izzy just stares at me. Blank-faced, unable or unwilling to comment further, so I continue. I know why you're here, Agent Murphy. Now I've got his attention.
What?
It's just my job. Don't take it personally.
You've been digging in my past?
Let's just say yes, and I can't help it. I smile.
Is everything a game to you?
Izzy is back now, pissed off, about me knowing her better than she thought. Or knowing her new boyfriend, I'm not quite sure. Pretty much, yeah, I say. Why not, right? Why not play life like a game? It's as good a strategy as any.
You're fucking with the FBI, Murphy says, dead serious.
Are you sure about that?
I say, leading him by the hand again. He just stares at me, so I continue.
Are you really sure about that, Agent Murphy? Because someone at the FBI, an organization to which you belong, fed you a lie last night about me being unavailable.
Let me guess, I say, looking back at Izzy. Something happened last night after our little chat. She squints her eyes at me. And they wanted to question you about it. You're a very smart woman, Izzy. I knew this intuitively, even before I started looking into your background. So you rightly said, lawyer, and they countered with, he's unavailable. Am I right?
She swallows, licks her lips, then says, "Close?"
"Okay," I say, folding my hands on my desk and glancing up at Murphy again. "So I was here last night, pretty late, in fact. I didn't get any calls. No calls came into reception either. So..." I open my hands up. "Obvious answer, people."
"You're telling me my department is dirty?" Murphy says.
"Is that what I'm telling you?" I ask back. "Or is that something you already knew, Finnegan Murphy?"
"Good for you. You've got a file on me." "Ah, he's starting to get it now." "This isn't looking good for you, Wells. You're playing a game you can't win."
But I just say, "Whoever makes the rules wins, Murphy. You know that just as well as I do."
Chapter 22. Izzy. Whoever makes the rules wins. Well, I can't argue with that. We left Jordan's office after that little remark. He encouraged us, actually. Got up, pointed to the door, and said, "If you don't mind, please close the door on your way out." "He's hiding shit from his father," Finn says. "Did you catch that little remark?" "I did, but so what?" "We could take this to him. I'm sure Wells Sr. would be very interested in knowing what his son and full partner in his very high-profile law firm is doing." "We could," I say, looking out the window as we travel down I-25 towards the tech center. "But we'd be following the wrong leads." Finn is quiet after that. Quiet the whole rest of the way. We're already off the freeway, turning into the hotel, when he finally says, "We're gonna figure this out." "Yep," I say. "We are, for sure." And then I look at him, wait for him to look at me as we pull up to the valet. But it's not going to be good. It might be better to just walk away.
"What?"
"Just pack up my shit, leave the country."
"What the fuck are you talking about?"
"Finn," I say, turning in my seat. "That guy on TV this morning, Caleb Kelly, he's fucking mob, okay? And your boss, partner, whatever the fuck he is, was standing next to him. The FBI is dirtier than you ever imagined, and we, the two of us, are right in the middle of it."
"We're not running,"
he says. "No? Then what are we doing?"
"We're gonna tell them to go fuck themselves."
Which makes me laugh, just a little.
"That is your creed, right?"
he asks. "It is," I say.
"Then live by it, Izzy."
This hits me hard. I do live by it, and I seethe out the words. "Don't think one night of sex and danger makes you an expert on my life, okay? You don't know shit."
"Then tell me."
"Why should I tell you? We're not even on the same team."
"What team is that?"
"Hell if I know what team you're on, but my team is called Izzy Gray. That's who I play for." Then, before he can comment further, the valet is at the car, opening up our doors. I get out, hike my purse over my shoulder, and look around until I see Suzanne standing in front of the revolving doors holding a stack of files in her arms. "There you are," she says, walking quickly over to me. "Oh, who's this?" she asks, looking up at Finn. "Finn Murphy, meet Suzanne Levy. Suzanne, Finn. Now let's get to work. I've got women to inspire." Once inside, we take the elevator up to the banquet floor and come out into a room overflowing with women. The registration tables are busy, the vendor tables are packed, and I let Suzanne lead me into a small room where we've got Command Central set up. I've done a lot of these seminars over the past several years, but this is only the second one I've done here in Denver. I like this place. I like Chella. I like my little downtown office. I like the women I've met so far. I like the mountains. I even went skiing for the first time last month and liked that too. But I can like a lot of places. I'm not partial to places. I'm partial to survival. And seeing Caleb's face on TV, well, that's enough to kick me into survival mode. I shouldn't even do this seminar because I've already made up my mind to run again, and that just gives Caleb time to come find me. But I can't let all these women down. Today's seminar is free. That's how this works. I give a free seminar, inspire them, and the ones with the money get the hope. But that's not how it's gonna work today. I'll be gone by the time they come looking for me. I have an online class ready to go just for this kind of emergency. They can take that. It's free, too. So I'm actually looking out for them. I'm thinking of them as I take care of myself, so I'm not gonna feel bad about this. I can interact with them online. I won't leave them stranded. I'll figure out a way. I look over at Finn, who's got one arm across his chest and one hand up to his mouth, like he's thinking pretty hard about something. And since he's staring straight at me, I can only assume it's me he's thinking about.
Okay, Suzanne says. It's go time. I'll go start the introductions.
I nod at her. She knows something's up, but she won't ask. Not right before a seminar. Suzanne has been with me since my very first book. She was the first point of contact at the agency I submitted the proposal to. She saved it from the slush pile, pushed it hard, and when her boss said no, she called me herself. Which was probably unethical on her part, but in her defense, she quit that job immediately and started working for me. We've been a team ever since. Until now. Because this is all over. It was a good run, a pretty wild ride. I mean, looking back on all I've accomplished in the last 8 years, it's a miracle, really. Suzanne will go her way, I'll go my way, and everything will be done virtually from now on. Hey, Suzanne says, squeezing my arm, you're gonna be great. Which isn't some meaningless affirmation to calm my stage fright. It's not even about the seminar today. It's about tomorrow. It's written all over my face. It's in my expression, playing out through body language. She sees it coming. She must just feel it. And we've had a contingency plan in place since the very first webinar. She knows there's more to my life than I tell the clients. Much more. Yeah, everything's gonna be great, I reply. She smiles at me, then opens the door, letting in the dull roar of 300 people out in the ballroom, and then closes it behind her, stifling it again. I look at Finn. He says,
I don't know what's going through that head of yours, but whatever it is, don't.
I smile. It's kinda real. I like him. He's not too uptight, but not too easygoing either. Kind of a middle-of-the-road guy, which I can appreciate. I spent most of my life living the highs and lows, riding them like a surfer rides a wave. I had no clue how much energy it took to live like that until I started doing yoga and tai chi and meditation. Life just got simple. When I let things go. And I've always had the kickboxing and the jiu-jitsu, which kinda took all that stagnant energy and gave it a home. Being Izzy Gray has been bliss. But I wasn't always Izzy Gray. I found bliss once. I can find it again. Look, I say, turning my back on him. I appreciate your help and everything, but...
No buts, Izzy. And let's just not talk about it now, okay? There's time later.
Sure, I agree. Because I can hear Suzanne talking into the microphone in the ballroom. She's talking me up, telling them how we met, about the book and the first seminar. Then, finally, how many people have taken the coaching class and graduated. Giving these newcomers hope. By letting them envision themselves at the end of the journey. And then she gets to the last part, the part where she finally has them welcome me to the stage. So I look at Finn and say, "See you on the other side." And his expression changes, and he knows what that means, but it's too late. I walk through the door and out into a standing ovation.
Chapter 23. Finn. I am Team Izzy. That's all I know. That's all I think about as I stand off to the side of the stage and watch her as she takes a room full of sad and desperate women and turns that into hope. She starts with her story, and even though I wish I was hearing it in private, and even though I know this is probably only a fraction of what's happened to her because no one shares everything in public, it satisfies me. It cements my feet firmly in front of her. It makes me want to fight her battles, keep her safe, and love her hard. "I was lost once," is how she starts the story. "Unrecognizable when I looked in the mirror. I was 18, and who isn't lost at 18, right?" I watch the crowd of women, many of whom nod their heads, thinking back on their own misspent youth. "And I got involved with a man. A very bad one at that. Which I can only assume is Caleb Kelly, newly released prisoner. Everything that's happening points to the mob. But I know. I already know. Not the specifics. I don't need the specifics. When a woman runs from a man, it's usually for one of two reasons. She runs for her life, or the lives of her children. Izzy doesn't have children, so it's the former. Whatever he did to scare her so bad, well, it doesn't need to be said. She doesn't say it now, but we all know. As I glance around the filled-up room, I see some of them are crying. Some of them look angry. Some of them look lost. All of them look at Izzy. She looks very small up on that stage. But then again, she looks very big, too. Her voice is loud and strong and confident, even though something very bad is happening to her today. She puts on the brave face, the face of a warrior, the face of a winner, the face of a woman. And she takes their pain and remolds it into hope. I've seen other self-help speakers. Not a lot, but there was a time in my life a few years back where I was all gung-ho about remaking myself, becoming a better man and shit like that. So I read books and I went to seminars, much like this one, but then again, nothing like this one at all. And I took a few classes. And yeah, it helped. But I never, ever experienced this. Izzy Gray is a phenomenon. She is world class. And soon, women are shouting out to her as she talks. Things like, "Yes," things like, "Holy shit," things like, "You're my hero." Because her story goes from bad to worse to evil. And she goes from pitied to sympathetic to admired. And she tells them almost no details. No names, no specifics, nothing like that. It's just this time and this guy and this gun. 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 It echoes in my head, and I need to know more. I need to know all of it. Not so I can understand her. I already understand her. But so I can join her. So we can walk side by side. So I can take up her banner and proclaim myself loyal. Eventually, I find myself sitting in a chair near the front row. The woman next to me is crying, and I have a sudden urge to take her in my arms and tell her it's all gonna be okay. That she is strong. That she is valued. That she is capable. But I don't need to. Because the woman sitting next to her does it first. I don't think they're together either. I think I think 2 hours ago they were total strangers, and now they're hugging like sisters. Izzy has a plan. She doesn't talk about what it will cost them, at least not in dollars. She talks about the parts of themselves they need to leave behind to move forward. She talks about guilt, because failure and guilt go together. She talks about forgiveness, not for the people who hurt them, although that's encouraged too, because to quote Izzy herself, forgiveness is freedom, but for themselves. Because everyone makes mistakes, and mistakes don't define you unless you let them. Mistakes are just tools to make better decisions in the future. And by the time the seminar is over, we're a family. Just me, Izzy Gray, her assistant Suzanne, and 300 sad but hopeful women. She says thank you, directs them to her website where a free online course is waiting for them, and then exits the stage. I can hear them all whisper, "Free? Did she say free?" Yes, that's what she said, which means there will not be another masterclass. The woman in front of me already has the website pulled up on her phone. Her excitement about the course is hard to contain, so in a matter of 30 seconds, all the women around me are gathered in front of her phone, filled with hope, filled with relief, filled with thoughts of salvation. I stand up, because I know I should make my way back to that little staging room. I know I have to stop whatever escape plan Izzy's about to enact. I know all this, but I find myself transfixed, stilled, by this woman. By her performance? No. By her honesty, her sense of responsibility to these 300 strangers. So I take just another minute, just 60 more seconds, and I see them, like really see them. And I realize, we are all Team Izzy.
Chapter 24. Izzy. There's always a bunch of commotion after a seminar. People want to talk to me, get my opinions, tell me their story, and I want to listen. I usually do listen. But today, I need to get out of here. I spy Finn in the open door of the staging room. He towers over most of the women. His eyes are searching for me because I get lost in a crowd. And then his gaze finds mine, and he smiles. I smile back, even though I don't feel much like smiling. Talking to people about their lives, the things that hold them back, and how to find hope for the future is an exhausting thing. And this time afterward is typically how I recharge the sadness I see on their faces as I talk. But today it's Finn's smile that recharges me. I sign books, because that's my job. And I listen to them, and smile, because I owe them that. We're in this together, all of us. So I owe them that. And I'm grateful. Even though this life is over for me, it's just starting for them. The free online course will help them. I'll try to answer emails for a while, but I'm leaving town today. I'm disappearing, turning into someone new tomorrow. I look at Suzanne, and she sighs, looking straight at me. She knows what's coming, but she doesn't know why. She has no details. "What's wrong?" she mouths from across the room. "I need to get out of here," I mouth back, slowly, so she can read my lips. She nods, then starts talking loudly, trying to get everyone's attention. I take one last look at Finn, who is caught in the crowd, trying to make his way towards me, and turn away. There's a door in the back of the room that leads to a more or less private hallway, and there's a stairwell there. I know that much, so that's where I end up.
"Izzy,"
Finn calls from behind me.
Wait!
I want to run, right now. Because I kinda like him. Even though I've known this man less than a day, it was kind of a fun day. The pleasure of panic. I guess it's true. Danger, even just the perception of danger, brings people closer. It creates bonds that don't evolve in any other situation. But it wasn't just the perception of danger, was it?
Izzy!
He says again when I disappear into the stairwell and let the door close behind me. But he follows, and a few seconds later he's jumping down the flight of stairs I've descended and blocking my way.
Where are you going?
I sigh, shaking my head.
You're not giving up.
He says this like you, of all people, giving up. I gotta leave, Finn. I'm sorry. I like you. And if things were different, we'd probably hit it off. Probably date. Maybe even last a while. But I'm not going to put myself in danger for the possibility of a relationship. You're some kind of distraction, I think.
Izzy,
he says, holding his hand up, palm towards me.
I swear.
I don't think you're in on it, Finn, but someone is fucking with me. And maybe you too. I shrug. Your partner, Declan, he's dangerous. He's got a position and power and a badge, and he was standing next to Caleb Kelly on TV this morning. A man, a very bad man, who should be in prison but isn't. And I don't want to say the rest, but it comes out anyway, because it must be said. He should be in prison and isn't. Just like you. That hits him pretty hard. He deflates a little, but he's not done trying.
Just,
he starts, but stops. And I get it. It's hard to know what to say when you're unsure of what's happening.
Just hold that thought,
he says, taking my hand, leading me down the stairs.
Just hold that thought, because we need to stop time for a little bit and just clear our heads.
I let him lead me, because that's where I was heading anyway. And when we burst through the doors on the ground floor, he looks both ways, like he's undecided, like he has no plan. And I just want to pull away, leave this hotel, leave this town, get on the road, and leave it all behind. I can start again. I've done it before. But then he goes right. He heads down the hallway. We enter the edge of the lobby, and he looks down at me and smiles a smile that says, "Don't underestimate me." We get in line at the front desk. What are you doing? I ask. But before he can answer, one of the reception people calls him forward to the counter.
"We'd like your best room, please,"
Finn says.
"We don't have a reservation."
"Let me check for you,"
the man at the desk says, his fingers clicking over a keyboard. He lifts one eyebrow, looks up at Finn, then over at me.
"The best," he asks. "Are you sure?"
"I'm sure,"
Finn says. "What are you doing?" I whisper.
"Stopping time,"
he whispers back. He hands over his credit card and ID, and a few minutes later, he's leading me towards the elevators. I exhale on the way up to the top floor, torn between leaving and staying. I'm totally on board with a timeout, but we can only run from reality for so long before...
"Stop,"
Finn says.
"Stop thinking about the future. We're in the here and now, Izzy. Be present."
Normally, that might rub me the wrong way. I'm always present. Except for today. Today, my world got upended, and it's been a very long time since I needed to concentrate on my own advice. The stuff I say on stage at seminars. The stuff I write in books. The stuff I tell other women to do. So I need the reminder. He flashes the key card at the door, it blinks green, and he opens it to reveal an entire wall of floor-to-ceiling windows with a view of both downtown Denver and the snow-capped mountains off in the distance.
The door closes with a heavy thunk, and then he's leading me over towards the windows. He spins me around, drags my jacket over my shoulders, down my arms, and tosses it aside. His strong hands are immediately on my arms, caressing them as he leans in to kiss me.
I melt as he pushes me up against the cool window, a chill tingling up my spine as my back connects to the glass. Take me, I whisper. Just take me. I know what he's doing, trying to take my mind off what's happening, using sex as a distraction. But it doesn't matter. He smells like conviction and stability. And when my hands find his biceps, he feels like a rock, like a wall, like he was made to stand in front of me. And even though I don't want to admit it, I need a protector right now. Him. I need him right now. Because everything I've built is about to crash down on top of me, pin me to the ground, and leave me to suffocate under a pile of rocks and debris called lies. Lies I've told. Lies I've lived. Lies that are about to come yank me back into the life I left behind. I didn't run far enough, not nearly far enough, because my past has caught up, and now it's time to pay my debts. So if he wants to help me forget for a day, I'm not gonna stop him. Please, I whisper, just take all of me, right now.
No, he says, I'm not going to take you. I already did that yesterday at your house. Now, I just want to worship you.
He lowers himself, his hands on my breasts. Just briefly, just for a moment, he squeezes them. And then his hands descend with him, pausing to unbutton my slacks, drag my zipper down, slip them and my panties over my hips until they fall to the floor at my feet, his eyes never leaving mine. He smiles. I smile back. I can't help it. And something leaves me in that smile. The fear, the tension, the frustration. His hands are on my thighs now, his thumbs pressing into the long muscles, easing their way between my legs until he makes me want to open them for him. No words are exchanged. They're not necessary. Just a few gentle touches that say more than words ever could. I close my eyes because his breath is tickling the soft skin as he breathes in my scent. What do I smell like? Fear and loneliness and anxiety. Panic. I smell like panic. His tongue is there, flicking against my clit, just as these words form in my head. And there it is, the pleasure of panic incarnate. I grab his hair, then loosen my fingers, wanting to be gentle with him for some reason. I open my legs wider as he forces his chin between them, his unshaven jaw scratchy and perfect as he moves his mouth against my opening. Worship me, he said. Yeah, that's how it feels. My knees buckle, but he holds me up. My legs begin to tremble, but he keeps me steady, licking me, sucking me, his hands reaching up now to squeeze my breasts. I want to melt. I want to succumb to the feeling of floating that's threatening to overtake all my practical sensibilities. I want to give in and give up at the same time. And just as that thought manifests, I slide my back down the cool, cool glass of the window, unable or unwilling to keep standing up. He chuckles a little, readjusting his body for my new position, resting himself on the floor, face between my now wide-open legs, hands on my still trembling thighs. My breath is ragged and uneven, but it matches the irregular, hard thumping of my heart inside my chest. And when he places his whole mouth over my pussy, his tongue flicking incessantly against my clit, I can't hold it in anymore. I can't keep it together. And he says, just let go.
his words vibrating into me like he's reading my mind. So I do, because I have no choice. I can't stop it, and I wouldn't want to anyway. He licks at the wetness spilling out of me, my body writhing from the climax, my spine stiff, then soft, then stiff again as the waves of pleasure wash through me. And then he stands, leans down, picks me up, and carries me to the bed, where he lays me down, gently, like I am something precious, and begins to undress himself. I watch every single moment of it. I memorize the way his fingers unbutton his shirt. I burn the image of his chest muscles, his abs, that cut line that disappears into his pants, into my memory, so I can think about it, dream about it, later. He takes off his jacket, then his shirt, and he's bare from the chest up. I'm still wearing my cami top, so I sit up a little and bring it over my head, then reach around to unfasten my bra as he unbuckles his belt, removes his pants, and stands in front of me. Hard, long, thick, his cock almost pulsing with anticipation. I look at it, crave it, then look up at him and find his attention on my mouth. I know what he wants. We want the very same thing, him inside me. So I lick my lips, position myself on my knees, and reach for his cock. His hands are immediately on my head, urging me to take him. I don't hesitate. I open my mouth and push forward until the tip of his swollen head hits the back of my throat, and I have to stop and regain some control. I breathe through my nose as I look up at his face. He's lost now, lost in the feeling of being inside me, lost in the idea of what's coming next. And when my mouth is filled up with saliva, I flatten my tongue against his shaft and withdraw until the tip of his cock is between my lips. "Fuck," he moans softly, and I like that moan, so I rub the head of his cock between my lips, kissing it, worshipping it the way he worshipped me. "Do you want to come in my mouth?" I ask him. He smiles.
"I appreciate the offer, but no."
"No,"
he says again, shaking his head. "I do want to come inside you, but not there."
I lean back, my heels touching my bare butt, and then I scoot over, pat the bed, and say, "Come here then, because I want to ride you." God, just saying that out loud is enough to get my pussy throbbing, but watching him do it has me nearing the edge of climax again. I close my eyes as he moves onto the bed, and when I open them again, he's lying back, head slightly elevated and resting against the headboard, making sure he can see me when I make the next move. If he minds sharing control, he doesn't show it. So I go slow. I twist, bringing one leg up and over his hips, positioning my pussy right over his upper thighs. His cock is long, reaching up to his belly button. It jumps when I take it in my hand and begin to pump him, my hand immediately wet from my own saliva. I lift my hips up, place him at my opening, then flick his head around before letting go and sitting down. We both moan. It's relief and filled expectations of what's to come. His arms wrap around my body, completely encircling my back. My hands rest on his shoulders as I rock forward, then push backward, forcing him to fill me up. My nails dig into his skin, and he lets out a long, low growl, immediately gripping my ass with the same intensity. We stare into each other's eyes, but we're really seeing our souls as they consider the possibility of mixing together.
"Come here,"
he says, and I don't know how I could possibly get any closer to him, but I do. My head bumps against his, our eyes so close, our souls touch.
Chapter 25. Fen. Even though this started out with me on my knees worshipping her pussy with my tongue, I have an overwhelming urge to ravish her. I want to flip you over, I say. Do it, she says. I want to grab a fistful of your hair and pull your head back so far you have to look me in the eye when I slip my cock between your ass cheeks and fill your pussy. Do it, she says. Our heads touching, our eyes meeting, our souls connected. I shake my head. I want to be gentle with her. I want to make her feel special, cherished, loved. How could that word even come up? Even as a passing thought in my head. I haven't even known her a day. And it feels like a lifetime. But I have no idea who she really is, what kind of trouble she's been in, or where she plans on being tomorrow. With me. She's going to be with me tomorrow. She grinds her hips down, forcing my cock even deeper inside her. Yes, she moans. Yes. Her nails are digging into my shoulders, pinpricks of pain that mingle with the pleasure. She notices something, an expression on my face or the growl that comes from my mouth, and takes these things as some kind of signal to do it again, which she does. Only this time, her nails drag down the curve of my shoulder. When I look down, there's a bright red welt rising up off my skin. You want it rough? I say, grabbing her hair and pulling until her head jerks. I love it rough. I love it. Give it to me rough, then. Make me remember this night forever. But I only hear the begging. Not the warning of what's coming tomorrow. Tomorrow is far away, hours upon hours away, and hours to Izzy and I are like years to other people. I have years to think about that last sentence. I hug her tightly. Her legs grip my thighs like she knows what's coming, and she'll do anything to keep my cock from slipping out of her pussy. But it can't be helped. I rock forward, get my knees underneath me, then bounce her back onto the mattress. She laughs like a girl, like a woman who is about to get the fuck of her life. Her legs wrap around my middle, scissoring me in her grip, like she's gonna use some secret jiu-jitsu sex position on me. God, I hope she does that. You like it this way? She nods, still laughing. More. She says, teasing me. More. I reach behind my back, grab her ankles, and slowly push her legs open. She bites her lip, chews on it for a second, then closes her eyes and sucks in a breath of air when she's spread eagle, my hands pushing her knees into the mattress. I lean forward and kiss her belly. She writhes, bucking and squirming, pressing her breasts up towards my face until her nipples seem to be begging for my lips. I can't deny them. Even if I wanted to, it's beyond my control. My tongue flicks against her peaked nipple, making her moan, and then I nip it with my teeth. Not too hard, but hard enough to make her squeal. More. More. Again. I've got more for you. Don't worry, I say, backing away, giving myself enough space so I can flip her over on her stomach. Her knees bend, feet swinging up until they hit my chest. I grab them both, bringing them to my mouth, and kiss her toes. This. I have to stop and laugh. Because this undoes her. She screams, No! Oh my God, no, no, no! But I just say, be still. I'm ticklish, I told you that, she laughs. I'm not gonna tickle you, Izzy. Be still.
Just your touch.
But she stops. Because I'm kissing the sole of her left foot, my lips barely brushing against her tickle spot. She holds her breath. I know this because I'm watching her. I count to 10. then 15, still kissing the soft pad of her foot. And then at 20, it comes out in a rush, and I say, "See?" And she sees. She goes still. Her whole body stops fighting. Her mind relaxes as I hold her foot up to my lips. I reach down and place my other hand flat on her back, right between her shoulder blades, pressing the breath out of her again. Pushing her down, stealing her air, and making her exhale. And when her chest is empty of every molecule of oxygen, I grab her hair right up next to the scalp and pull her head back. Slowly. So slowly. And let her breathe in. I let her take what I'm offering, forcing her head and back to arch as I knee her legs open and position my cock right between her ass cheeks, just the way I imagined it. And when we're eye to eye, soul to soul, only then do I lunge my cock deep into her pussy. She's propping her upper body with her hands flat on the mattress, and I'm riding her ass, my groin pounding her, my balls slapping against her skin. She repositions her knees so she's up off the bed a little, giving me more room to fuck her. And just as she starts begging,
"More. Harder. Harder still."
I slow. I still. This time her begging cuts off. Because she only feels what I want her to feel, and I want her to feel me. I'm not just a man behind her. I'm not just another guy trying to make her fantasy come true. I'm Finn Murphy, and I want her to know. This is what I can give her. Me and only me. "Open your eyes," I growl. Her pussy feels so tight, so wet, so perfect I want to come right now, but I don't. Because I'm not done with her yet. She tries to obey my request, but can't quite do it. I'm easing in and out of her so slowly now she's whimpering. "Open your eyes," I say it again. This time she does it, and in the same moment I release her hair and wrap my hand around the front of her throat, not choking her, not even squeezing, just holding her in position. "But it's enough," she whispers.
"Please."
And that's as far as she gets, because just as her request escapes her lips, I thrust forward so hard she exhales again. Empties herself for me so I can fill her up.
"Come inside me," she says.
I thought she'd never ask. I lean down so my chest is pressing right up against her back, reach underneath her belly so my fingers can find her clit, and strum her. Back and forth so fast she begins to wail, begins to beg, begins to yell,
"Yes! Oh God, yes!"
She clamps down on my cock, gushing on my dick and coating it with her sweet release. Her whole body goes rigid as she gasps, sucking in air like she's desperate for it, her throat constricting underneath the grip of my hand. And when she empties herself of breath this one last time, I spill into her. My mouth is on her ear, kissing it before I lose control and drop my lips to the fleshy part of her shoulder so I can nip her skin and make her whimper. Sweat breaks out of my stomach, making our bodies slick from the sex. I grab her tight around the waist and roll her over, taking her with me. We suck all the breaths now, greedily, no longer cherishing the deprivation of life-giving air. Her chest rises with mine as I hug her close and hook my legs around hers, caging her in, so she can't even think about that escape plan she's been cooking up all day. "You're not going anywhere," I growl into her ear. She smiles. I can't see her smile, but I know she smiles.
She wants me to keep her prisoner here with me forever. I know it. Because you're my bodyguard?